Hello, I'm Anna Maria Tremonti. You are listening to The Current. Well, it's a story with a stroke of luck. First, almost fatally bad luck, then head-scratchingly good luck. Years ago, an 11-year-old, Kevin Steven, was helping out as a bat boy at a baseball diamond in Buffalo, New York. One of the players accidentally hits him in the chest with a bat. It's a serious injury, and for some terrifying moments, his mother thinks he might die. And she tells her story on the History Channel's TV program, William Shatner's program, Weird or What?
I remember them rolling him over and just seeing his eyes, like, just wide open, fixed, and dilated, like, just no response. It was horrifying, absolutely horrifying.
Luckily, Penny Brown, the mother of another boy, and who was supposed to be at work, was watching from the stands.
He's not breathing. Call an ambulance.
Penny is a nurse, so upon witnessing what happened to Kevin, she immediately knew what needed to be done to save him. She started to do CPR on him. That didn't work, so she hit him twice in the chest really hard and restarted Kevin's heart.
So the nurse saves Kevin's life, and then, well, if the program doesn't give you a hint, it gets weird. 7 years later, Kevin is working part-time at a diner when a woman starts to choke, and he runs over to help.
He had to do two thrusts, and the food was released, and she was breathing again.
Kevin's quick thinking and anti-choking maneuver saved the woman's life. But there was something else, something strange, Lorraine began to notice.
And then my mom said,
Kevin, do you realize who this is? Penny Brown saved your life a few years ago, and now you've just saved hers.
And I was absolutely in shock. I couldn't believe it.
Well, you gotta wonder why Penny was at the baseball diamond that night. She wasn't supposed to be. And you gotta wonder why was my son at work that afternoon when he wasn't supposed to be.
And I'm guessing that was a reenactment, all that noise you heard. But there you go. Was it a coincidence? Was it fate? Was it plain luck that somehow intervened to bring them together? Not once, but twice. Jeffrey Rosenthal explores notions of luck in his book. It's called Knock on Wood, Luck, Chance, and the Meaning of Everything. He's a professor of statistics at the University of Toronto. He's an expert on probability, and he's with me in Toronto. Hello.
Hello.
That's a very, very dramatic playing of that scene. It's quite incredible. What are the chances that those two people would end up saving one another's lives?
Yeah, so it's an amazing story. And of course, it has a lot of lessons. You know, it says it's good to learn CPR or learn how to save people. And it says, you know, somebody might save you. It's a wonderful story. But then, a lot of people say, well, there must have been, you know, fate or destiny. There must have been some special meaning to it. So when I think about a story like that, I sort of think about it one way is in terms of probabilities, as you say. So if you think of just those two people, what's the chance that one of them would save the other's life and then later the other one would save the first one's life? It's astronomical. It's one chance in billions of billions. But the way I would look at it is what I call the out of how many principle. And in this case, I would say there's so many different people out there and there's even more pairs of people out there, just a huge number of pairs of people out there. So then you say, well, what's the chance that at some point, some pair of people will have this incredible story that one saves the other's life and then the other saves its life? And I worked that out using some probabilities. And I said, the chance that at some point in my lifetime, some pair of people somewhere in the world will have this incredible story is something like one chance in three. That is, it's not that unlikely that at some point something will happen. Not because it's not an amazing story, but because there's so many different opportunities for it to happen.
That's incredible. One chance in three.
Yeah.
Now, in fact, William Shatner's Weird or What show asked you to do that math, right?
That's right, exactly. William Shatner, who I admire from Captain Kirk on Star Trek, I was all excited and he asked me. And so that was my perspective. And of course, also people including on the show, they would sort of think, well, it's this must be this supernatural force. There must have been some reason for it. But I also look at it in terms of sort of a biased observation in the sense that we all remember this incredible story, but there's lots of other people who had heart problems and there wasn't somebody in the stands who came and saved them, or people who choked at a restaurant and there wasn't somebody. And even those who were saved, well, it probably wasn't the same person who saved them. So there's all these different ones that didn't happen this way. So my thinking is if there really was some cosmic force that made it all happen, well, then this should happen more often. It shouldn't be so rare.
So they were just lucky?
Well, yeah, I would say, I mean, it was a combination, of course. Some of it was good preparation because both of them were trained in CPR. But then, yeah, they were absolutely lucky to be in the right place at the right time.
You make a distinction between that kind of random luck and another kind of meaningful luck.
Yeah.
Can you explain that?
Yeah. So, I mean, it comes down to when, you know, when these random things happen to us, which happen all the time, You know, is there some special meaning or force that creates it? You know, is there some purpose, some destiny, or is it just kind of random? And I think a lot of things out there really are just kind of random, but people want to believe that there's a force involved. So I talk about, you know, the idea of a forceful luck and, you know, this fate or destiny or these, you know, magical powers. And I think a lot of these things can be explained just by randomness. Once you think about what I sometimes call the luck traps, the reasons that you might think something is more special and meaningful than it really is.
Okay, well, before you get to the luck trap, give me an example of random luck coincidence.
Well, let's see. Random luck could be, for example, say, the weather. You know, there's, in fact, an amazing story from World War II that after they dropped an atomic bomb in Hiroshima, then the second bomb was not supposed to be dropped on Nagasaki. It was supposed to be dropped on another city in Japan called Kokura. But by the time the planes got ready and moved in, clouds had moved in. It had gotten too cloudy. And they said, we better go to a secondary target. And the closest one is Nagasaki. So that's a hugely impactful event and all change involving tens of thousands of lives because the clouds had moved in. So I'd say that's kind of random luck.
Random luck or bad luck, depending on what city you're living in.
Bad luck for one of them, good luck for the other city.
What about a more meaningful or fateful luck? Give me an example of that.
Well, that's a good question because a lot of things that people say are fateful luck, you know, I might not agree with. So, you know, if we imagine, let's say you go to a job interview and, you know, there's some amount of it involves your actual preparation. If you're well prepared for the job, if you studied about the company, if you've practiced your techniques at doing an interview and so on. But then some of it might be the randomness of who else applied for the job or what the company is really looking for. So I try to distinguish between the things that you maybe can have an effect on, like the probabilities because you're well prepared, and the things that you can't, like whether other people have applied.
So, or whether the person they really wanted to choose choked in a restaurant and no one was there to save her.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you think about all the coincidences which had to happen for us to be here, you know, our parents had to meet at some party or whatever, and they had to get together, and then we had to be born in the right place at the right time. It's sort of amazing how many random coincidences there are which brought all of us here.
You also tell stories about long-lost reunions and cheating death, that sort of thing. How do most people think about and try to make sense of that kind of thing?
Yeah, well, that's right. There's a lot of amazing stories. Another one is this story of these two half-brothers who never met, and then one of them happens to go to a beach in Hawaii and offers to take a picture for the family of this other this family that's on the beach, and they recognize that the accent sounds similar, and they start talking, and it turns out they're half-brothers, even though they've never met. And so, you know, again, I would say that, well, out of all the different pairs of people who could have met and it could have been meaningful, this one could have happened just by random chance. But a lot of people would believe that there's this, you know, fate or this force and, you know, that he was compelled to go to the beach that day.
Why are people so keen to believe that something might be written in the stars or meant to be or be a divine intervention?
Yeah, well, it seems that people have a real need for events that happen to have some sort of a meaning. And, you know, it goes back to in the old days, if there was a big storm, well, that meant the gods were angry. It didn't just mean that, you know, the water molecules were moving in a certain way. So, I think people have a need to explain things in terms of stories, in terms of meaning, in terms of morality sometimes, right and wrong. And I understand the need for that. Certainly you see that all the time in fiction, you know, in rom-coms, the couple has to get together because they were meant for each other. Or, you know, if there's sort of a bad guy, well, in the end, the bad guy has to lose because they were, you know, what they were doing was evil. So people have a real need for that. It's in the stories that we tell. And in real life, even if there really isn't such a force, people have a real need to make such a story and sometimes to see it the way they want to. And of course, it's not always for positive. You know, sometimes like there was a very sad story of a teenager who got cancer and his parents came up to me and they wanted me, you know, to sign a copy of my book for them. Oh, sure. And but they wanted me to make it out to their son. Oh, sure. But their son was dead. And they said, our son died from cancer. And gosh, you know, I never made out a book to someone who died before. But they said, you know, he took great comfort as he was dying. They'd read to him from my book and they'd said, you know, he realized that it was all random and the fact that he had this terrible bad luck of getting cancer, it wasn't because he'd done something wrong. It wasn't because he deserved it. It wasn't because he was bad. It was just because of the horrible randomness of cancer. And it's, you know, it's a very sad story. It's kind of emotional. But at the same time, there is a certain comfort in randomness that saying that everything happens for a reason and everything has meaning isn't always so good if the stuff that happens is bad.
So if there's one thing where luck plays a part, it's the lottery. How do our attitudes to lotteries reflect our overall attitudes about luck?
Yeah, lotteries are interesting. In fact, the single thing I get asked about the most when I talk about probabilities, well, what about winning the lottery jackpot? You know, what are my chances? And I try to tell people, you know, the chance of winning the lottery jackpot is so small. You know, if you drive to the store to buy your ticket, then you're more likely to die in a car crash on the way than you are to win the jackpot. But a lot of people buy tickets anyway, and sometimes that's just for fun because you can dream about how you might win. But a lot of people really feel, no, this is my day. Why? Because I'm feeling lucky, or because I chose my lucky numbers, or I have a system. You know, someone told me they have a system where you look at the spaces between the numbers on the lottery ticket, and that somehow tells you. And, you know, of course, there really can't be any such system because the numbers are chosen randomly, and there's really no way to beat that. But people do have a feeling, you know, maybe their horoscope tells them, or some reason that they think they're going to win. And, you know, I don't want to necessarily disabuse them of that because, you know, if they're enjoying playing, it's okay. But they should understand just how unlikely it is and how you really can't do anything to beat that. That's random luck.
Is there any scientific way at all that people can improve lottery chances?
Well, there's really not that much you can do. Although when people press me, I say there is one thing you can do, which is that if you do win the jackpot, you'd rather not have to share it with other people. So since every collection of numbers has the same chance of winning the jackpot, it's smarter to choose numbers which are probably not going to be picked very much by other people. And for example, a lot of people pick numbers based on birthdays and so on. So for example, if some of your numbers are more than 31, then they won't correspond that much to birthdays. So there's things you can do and not follow an obvious pattern that lots of people might follow. So the one smart thing you can do if you want to play the lottery is pick numbers that you don't think lots of other people are going to play.
Or save your lottery money and invest it.
Well, that's what I do. I don't think so. But, you know, if you're having fun and just spend a little, then that's okay,
too. All those tickets add up, yeah.
Yeah.
So the CBC's Fifth Estate investigated a lottery story and brought you in for your expertise. A man named Bob Edmonds had bought a lottery ticket in his hometown of Cobequenque, Ontario. Let's hear what happened.
Everyone's friendly here. So when Bob went into Kobe Variety and asked the clerk to scan his tickets, he had no reason not to trust her. Not even when he heard the lottery machine chime twice. Normally that means you've won twice, but the clerk told Bob he had just one win, a free ticket. He went home a little confused.
When you win a ticket, the machine plays a tune, and I heard the tune twice.
What Bob didn't know is that while he puzzled, the clerk, Phyllis LaPlante, was on her way to the OLG's head office in Toronto with Bob Edmonds' ticket for $250,000 in her hand. Phyllis wanted the money.
So the store clerk was trying to keep the lottery windfall for herself.
Right.
She didn't succeed, but it took him, Bob Edmonds, years to get what was rightfully his. Amid a lot of stonewalling from the Ontario Lottery and Gaming Corporation, when the Fifth Estate discovered the story, they got you involved. What did they want you to do?
Yeah, that's right. So Bob Edmonds, of course, at first nobody believed him because, you know, who doesn't go out there and say, oh, I think I should have won that lottery instead. But he had enough evidence in terms of the numbers he normally played and so on that eventually he convinced people. But the lottery company tried to keep it hush-hush, and well, why was that? Well, they were worried there might be other cases out there, and it would look really bad for them. And so when the Fifth Estate started investigating, that was their angle. They said, wait a minute, was this just the one time that there had been a problem with someone who worked at the lottery store keeping the ticket that should have belonged to the customer, or is this something which had happened before? So they were able to obtain, through some Freedom of Information requests, some information about how many of the major lottery prizes had been won by people who actually worked in the lottery stores. And then we had to sort of compare that to, well, how many people do work in lottery stores and how many lottery tickets do they tend to buy? Maybe they buy a little more than the average person. But when I put it all together, so that's why they brought me in to look at the statistics of this, I said, okay, well, of course, we'd expect those people to win some of the big prizes, but not as many as they are winning. And they say, well, they could have gotten a bit lucky. But I said, yeah, but to get this lucky and win this many prizes was astronomically unlikely. So I said it's virtually impossible that they would have won all these prizes just by buying tickets in the ordinary way. There must have been something more going on, and it seemed like what was going on was that they were sometimes managing to keep the winning ticket that should have belonged to the customer.
What was the fallout from that story?
So it was huge, and you know, I didn't really expect it. I thought this is one more story about lottery probabilities, but man, it was the front page of every paper. It was the lead story on every news item, and people were really angry, and I think it's because a lot of people play the lotteries, and they feel like they could have been ripped off, and they took it very personally. So there was huge outrage, and it ended up leading to you know, debates in the provincial legislature about how the lottery company was being run. The CEO of the lottery company got fired, and perhaps most interestingly, the police started investigating some of these specific claims, and they eventually determined that some of them were fraudulent, and a few people who claimed these prizes were actually arrested for fraud, and in some cases, millions of dollars were actually paid back to the people who should have won it in the first place.
It's amazing what statistics can tell you and where they can lead. Okay, well, so you mentioned luck traps. Let's get to that now.
Okay.
What do you mean when you talk about a luck trap?
Yeah, so there's a lot of different things. And one is that people will tend to notice, say, one example where something does back up their belief or their superstition or whatever, and they'll think that it's a pattern, and they won't notice the times when maybe it didn't work out that way. So, this is an unlucky day because this one bad thing happened, but... Yeah, but what about the good things that happened that day? Or what about the bad things that happened a different day? But people will only tend to notice or remember or focus on the ones that confirm them. So it's sort of a confirmation bias, or we call that like a biased observation. And it's saying, well, yeah, but you're not taking into account all the different observations, just the ones which show your story.
And how vulnerable are we generally as vulnerable people on that front?
Well, hugely. I mean, for example, one example is dreams. And, dreams are actually fascinating. But in particular, people will sometimes think, I got a message from the dream. Someone told me they'd lost their bracelet and they couldn't find it anywhere. And then they had a dream that the bracelet was in the dumpster behind the house. And they went back and sure enough, they found it. And they say that proves that, their dreams had some special insights. And I say, well, yeah, maybe. But of course, we only remember the dreams that tell us something amazing. And if she'd had that dream and then she'd gone out and the bracelet wasn't there, she would have forgotten it immediately. Or if it wasn't a dream that was somehow important to her, she would have forgotten it. So we tend to remember the ones which prove these patterns. And that's why we sometimes see patterns even when they're not there.
You target the media a little bit for falling for luck traps. How so?
Well, yeah, I guess one thing is what I sometimes call a headline bias. That is, the media will only report on the things which are dramatic or interesting, which is what, the media has to do. But, well, for example, with crimes, there's a... lots of headlines if, somebody's murdered or if a child's kidnapped and so on. And people might get the impression that this is happening all the time. But then again, you could think in terms of out of how many, as I mentioned, you could say, okay, there was one horrible murder, but out of how many people who live in the city or how many people who live in the country? So it's actually not so bad. But the media, of course, isn't going to put up any headlines saying, hey, there were no murders today. Hey, there was no one who died of a heart attack today. Hey, everything was fine today.
Yeah, so, town sleeps well for a week. Yeah,
exactly.
Okay, this so, just in, yeah.
Yeah, which, of course, is what the media has to do. But that's a form of bias and a form of a luck trap.
Some people may be discouraged to hear that you debunk the idea that there are not people who are somehow inherently luckier than others. Is there an upside to that?
Yeah, well, it's funny how people will believe, because, of course, as with many things with luck, there's different ways to interpret it. And one is to say, how lucky have you been in the past? So, like in my case, I have a good job, I have pretty good health, I have a nice family, I have good friends, I get to be on your show, so everything's going lucky for me. But
you're living the life.
I'm living the life, but that doesn't necessarily mean that I'm intrinsically lucky and that what happens next week is going to necessarily be good. And similarly, some people might have gone through some rough times, and it doesn't mean that everything's going to be rough. There's an old movie called The Cooler where there's a casino in Vegas, I think, where they hire this guy played by William H. Macy because he's so unlucky, he's such a loser, that if he just stands next to other people who are gambling, then they have bad luck and then they always lose. So like he's got this, power of unlucky. And in real life, it's just hard to see how that could be possible. And in fact, there's no real evidence for it. Some people will have good or bad luck, but that doesn't mean that in the future it's going to continue.
I've been to Vegas once.
Okay.
And I was literally on a roll, and I don't know how to play, I'm no good at this, but I was like winning.
Right.
And there were two guys who stood next to me and started actually gambling because of me. Right.
Yeah.
And then, of course, and it all went south very fast, and they moved away and it's like, get away from us.
Yeah.
But they thought I was lucky for a brief moment in time.
Yeah. Well, it is funny the way people will, again, look for trends. And for example, at a casino, if someone's winning a lot, then some people think, oh, yeah, they're lucky. They're going to keep winning. So they'll bet with them. Other people will think, well, the luck has to balance out in the long run. So if they just won, maybe next time they have to lose. So I'm going to bet against them. But in reality, you can't think either way, because every new time you gamble at the casino, that's an independent trial.
Maya Young also studies luck. She's an associate professor of organization and management at the University of California, Irvine. She looks at how people's beliefs affect their behavior, and she's done some research about beliefs about luck in particular. Listen to her.
Some people think of luck as a trait that follows them around. Like, they consider themselves to be a lucky person, and they don't think about luck as just a random thing. Those people who think about luck as a stable trait are more likely to feel empowered and to feel a sense of personal control, which leads them to have achievement motivation, which means they want to take on challenging tasks, and they see themselves as persisting when they trip up. Believing in your own luck, not just luck, believing in yourself as lucky can actually have an empowering effect on people and a positive effect because it changes their behaviors. I don't parse it as an irrational belief. It might not be true, but if you think of yourself as lucky, you might approach a task with an extra sense of ease, or you might not judge yourself at every single turn. And that might amount to more resilience. That might amount to more persistence.
Jeffrey Rosenthal, what about that idea that just believing that you're a lucky person can be beneficial?
Yeah, well, absolutely. I mean, it gets into the whole psychology of, you know, how we think about things and how we think about ourselves. And it's related to what's called the placebo effect. As you probably know, if someone's, you know, given a medicine, but it's not really a medicine, but you tell them it's going to make them better, that can help. And one of the most striking examples of that, of which there's many, was a study where they had people run a 200-yard dash, but then the second time they ran it, they gave them a drink, and it was really just sugar water, but half of them, they said, oh, this is a special energy drink that's going to give you extra energy. And then they all ran the 200 meters as fast as they could. And the ones who'd been told that the energy drink was going to give them special energy, they were on average about 2 seconds faster, which is a lot, than the ones who weren't told that. So it's the amazing psychology of the human brain. And absolutely, having just sort of a self-confidence or, you know, feeling like things are going to go your way can be a huge boost. And I guess the flip side is if you feel like, no, it's not going to work out, I'm going to screw up, then that's going to hurt you. And, you know, it's the same reason that parents should tell their children nice things as they're growing up about how wonderful they are and shouldn't criticize them too much, because the more that you feel that you're a good person, that you have the ability to do things, you're going to do well. So that's certainly true. And it's maybe not always important if it's true or not, like with the energy drink. Well, maybe it's not an energy drink, but if you believe it, it's going to help you.
So what do you think of the idea that we make our own luck?
Yeah, I mean, I've sometimes used that phrase myself. And as with a lot of things, it depends what you mean by luck. But for example, if you're well prepared, you know, and you've gotten a good education and you've learned your job well, then you're probably going to do better. Even the things that come up, you know, something you didn't expect, but that's okay because you have all your training and so on, you're going to handle it well. Whereas if you don't have the proper preparation and maybe the proper attitude and so on, then you won't. So it's a case where there's going to be randomness that you can't control, but how it affects you and how you deal with it could depend on the decisions you've made and the training you've made and the attitude that you've had. So there's a lot of ways in which we do make our own luck, even though there's some things we cannot control.
You know, there's a political and ideological issue, questions running through all of this. I have a clip I want you to hear. This is U.S. Supreme Court Chief Justice John Roberts, who gave a speech to his son's private prep school as his son was graduating from grade 9 last year. Listen to part of his message.
Now, the commencement speakers will typically also wish you good luck and extend good wishes to you. I will not do that, and I'll tell you why. From time to time in the years to come, I hope you will be treated unfairly so that you will come to know the value of justice. I hope that you will suffer betrayal because that will teach you the importance of loyalty. I wish you bad luck again from time to time, so that you will be conscious of the role of chance in life and understand that your success is not completely deserved and that the failure of others is not completely deserved either.
Okay, well, that's a little bit of tough love there. What do you think of that?
Yeah, actually, I thought that was an amazing speech, and I thought that, you know, very enlightened of him to say that. Now, oftentimes, people who are, you know, rich and successful and powerful might not remember that a lot of their success might have been due to luck, and I try to remember that myself. You know, I have a pretty good life, and I try to remember that certainly if I'd been born into a different family, or if I grew up in a different country, or if I hadn't had the educational opportunities I had, then I might well have had much less success. So it's not that I deserve it, and it's not that I completely earned it. It's some combination of what I did and what happened to me randomly just by luck.
You know, others argue there is a system of privilege that does create luck for privileged kids. How do ideology and politics fit into that discussion?
Well, it's possible that people, how they perceive that might also affect their political beliefs. If you think in terms of, say, the role of government, whether the role of government is to kind of help out everyone and take care of everyone, then you might think, because, you know, some people might be having a rough time, but that's not their fault. They've had bad luck and so on. Whereas if you believe that everyone's already gotten exactly what they deserve and the universe, you know, gives to the people who deserve it and not those who don't, then you might think, yeah, why should the government help out people who aren't doing well? I certainly tend towards the first of those. I want the government to help people out because, and I guess one reason is because if somebody didn't do well, it's not necessarily their fault. I also think even if it was their fault, the government should help them. But nonetheless, you know, some of us do better than others just based on all sorts of random factors and based on our upbringing and so on.
Now that you have done all this thinking and researching into luck, how often do you end up thinking there might be something more than chance at work in events in your own life?
Yeah, well, I mean, when writing the book, I tried to keep an open mind because my background is pretty much, you know, the scientific person who, you know, knows the rules of probability and chance and, you know, doesn't believe in all these superstitions and destiny and so on. But I did recognize more and more that, first of all, in fiction, it's always exciting when there's, you know, special powers. But then it does spill over to our real lives. In fact, I tell the story in the book of how just before the election of Donald Trump, I ended up making a bet with a political science professor, just sort of for fun. We made a little bet, but he wanted to take the side that Clinton was going to win. But I also thought Clinton was going to win, so I wanted that side too. But he said he'd give me 2-to-1 odds, so I said, okay, fine. So I took the bet that if Trump won, I was going to win $2, but if Clinton won, he was going to win $1. And sure enough, incredibly, to everyone's surprise, including mine, you know, Trump won, and we were all kind of shocked and everything, and I went to bed late, and you know, couldn't really believe it. And then in my half-asleep state, I somehow got this idea that it was my fault, because I'd made this bet, and I'd bet that Trump was going to win, and that had somehow had this mystical power that had caused Trump to win. And of course, when I thought about it rationally the next day, there was absolutely no way that the bet could possibly have influenced even one vote. But nonetheless, you know, I really had this strong feeling in the middle of the night, and I have to appreciate that people will have these feelings. People do want there to be stories and meaning, and you know, whether it's a good or bad thing, people want there to be a reason, not just this randomness or not things that are completely out of our control. People want to build these stories.
Okay, so it wasn't your quest for one loony that...
well, that's right.
Or the toonie. Yeah.
I got the toonie. I still have it. But yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I would have been happy to give it back.
So interesting. So even you, who should know better, has your moments.
That's right. And yeah, I have a section of the book about that because, you know, I'm trying to be fair. And, you know, I like to say, oh, I'm this scientific, rational person. But we do have this need for these things. And absolutely, it happens sometimes to me and to my colleagues, you know, people who are very highly educated, but they'll have certain superstitions and so on.
Well, thank you for coming in.
Okay, thank you.
Jeffrey Rosenthal, professor of statistics at the University of Toronto. His new book is called Knock on Wood, Luck, Chance, and the Meaning of Everything. I'm Anna Maria Tremonti. You are listening to The Current on CBC Radio 1. Stay with us.